You are listening to a Mining Stock Daily podcast. Hello, and welcome to episode 4 of the AME podcast, Exploration Matters. I'm your host, Kylie Williams, and today is Friday, July 29. On the podcast today, we're talking about diversity. In recent years, the last decade or so, we've tended to focus our efforts on increasing gender diversity. This is still a critical issue, but the diversity conversation within our industry is rightfully widening to include other underrepresented groups. Our first guest is Denton's lawyer, Robin Long. A big part of his work as co-lead on Denton's national mining practice is advising junior explorers to producing mining companies on all aspects of their operations, including environmental, social, and governance issues. We then continue the diversity conversation with Jill Salinas, Executive Director of BC's Centre of Training Excellence in Mining, or CTEM, and also Chair of the AME Board. CTEM recently released a report looking at the diversity of our industry, the barriers to inclusion, and the modifications we can make to attract and promote people from underrepresented groups, and customize training to include those people. But before we dive into those interviews, let's take a peek at some news from the last few days. At the Blackwater Project in central British Columbia, Artemis Gold announced on July 28 that it had signed on with Caterpillar to supply the mining fleet. This is an important milestone for the new gold mine, as Artemis prepares to begin major construction activities once the final BC Mines Act permit is received, which the company is targeting for fall 2022. Over in north central BC, in the Golden Horseshoe area, Benchmark Metals provided an update on July 27 with plans to drill multiple new targets adjacent to their AGB deposit on their Lawyers Gold-Silver project. These new targets have never been drill tested. They're blind and are both parallel to and along strike from the north trending faults controlling mineralization at AGB. Heading way further south, Vancouver-based Ivanhoe Electric provided an update on July 28 to their activities at the Santa Cruz project in Arizona. The Santa Cruz project, they're calling the second largest underdeveloped copper deposit in the lower 48 states. Seven drill rigs are now active, working on an 85,000-meter drill program of resource infill, geotechnical, hydrological, and metallurgical drilling. And now, a word from today's sponsor. This episode of the AME podcast Exploration Matters is brought to you by Denton's Canada. Denton's Canada's mining team is your Canadian connection to mining around the world. The Denton's Canada team offers a truly global mining practice. They have extensive experience advising clients operating on every continent with both early stage and developed mining projects. No matter where you are in the course of your mineral exploration and development, Denton's is able to assist you at every stage of the process, including financing, construction, production, and reclamation. Dive deep into diversity. Our first guest today is Robin Long. Robin is a corporate lawyer at Denton's Vancouver. He's also co-lead on the national mining practice for Denton's. I invited Robin onto the podcast to talk about his observations of the shift from a focus on gender diversity to a broader notion of diversity, and the way that society is holding companies accountable for their racial diversity strategies. But I started by asking him about the trends in diversity and ESG that he has observed in recent years.
Trends and developments, as you know, in ESG are often shaped by the world around us. In the past number of years have really been in many ways outside of the ordinary, with a series of significant events. And investors often assess and consider these factors, which may include societal, environmental developments when assessing their investments, and then these become part of ESG-related criteria.
Mm.
In addition to the pandemic and climate change, and those things have obviously dominated the news over the past few years, another key news story has been the greater awareness for and initiatives to combat anti-Black systemic racism.
Mm. We tend to see ourselves as quite isolated, you know, we're in the field for months at a time. How do these, like, what are some examples of some events that have happened that you've seen kind of reflected in our industry?
Yeah, in terms of the events in the world around us, so you know, diversity has been part of ESG for some time, but the recent death of George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter movement has established the importance of anti-racism and broader diversity as leading elements of ESG. And this movement is really part and parcel to achieving parity amongst all peoples in corporate Canada.
Mm.
And so there really has been a movement, not necessarily away, but from simply gender diversity to a broader concept of anti-Black systemic racism as well.
Yeah, I guess there has been more of a spotlight shone on the gender diversity piece prior to the tragic death of George Floyd. But what does that shift look like from, you know, that gender focus to other types of inclusion?
Yeah, so it's a good question. So it's a sort of a shift from gender diversity to a broader notion of diversity. And that's really about holding companies accountable for their racial diversity strategies. And we've seen trends recently towards greater stakeholder and shareholder interests and pushing to eliminate systemic racism. And the companies that are slow to increase diversity, especially at the C-suite and board level, may end up being the focus of activists and shareholder proposals. So one thing that you may have heard about is the Black North Initiative Summit, which was held by the Canadian Council of Business Leaders against anti-Black systemic racism. And Canadian companies here were challenged to sign off on a pledge to do their part to end anti-Black systemic racism.
Mm. So how did, tell us a bit more about that summit. Like, was it all companies, or was it specifically mining companies, or was it everyone?
Yeah, so it was more than 300 organizations, and they represented over $1 trillion in combined market cap. They signed a pledge which holds the goal of achieving at a minimum 3.5% of Black representation in executive and board roles in Canada by 2025, I believe. And so it wasn't just mining companies, but certainly mining companies were part of it.
Mm, absolutely. And so how do companies achieve this goal? Like, it's very specific. It's like, you know, 3.5%. How do they measure? How do they take action to improve this? What are some examples that you're seeing out there?
Right. So good question. So there's, we've observed recent issues by our mining company clients that fall into sort of three categories. And I guess the first is structured diversity initiatives, staff training and education, and then through funding. And with the structured diversity initiatives, we're seeing that some of our clients in the mining sector have been arranging this into their business model and internal feedback system. So, for example, we worked with one client that's established an advisory committee comprised of staff from all levels of the company who advocate for diversity and inclusion initiatives on their teams.
Mm-hmm.
I'd mentioned staff training and education. Certainly, that's becoming much more prevalent. And it's a mechanism that's it's commonly used in mining companies, large and small. It really I guess holds the aim of making the workplace more inclusive and safe for people of color.
Mm.
And then lastly, I talked about the funding programs, and yeah, committing to funding to diversity is another way that companies are working to tackle this. And for example, certain mining companies that we work with are committing significant amounts to advance inclusion within their leadership programs, and with a goal of obtaining a certain percentage of Black, Indigenous, and people of color across their business platform.
That's interesting. I guess there are some companies that are doing all three and some that are trying just one of these tools.
Yeah, it's becoming much more prevalent. All different strategies are being employed, especially by the larger mining companies.
Absolutely. Must be interesting, off topic a little bit, but it must be interesting to be a global company and having these pressures from different angles. Like, you know, there are things happening in the US that are impacting, and then Australia probably has a slightly different, you know, approach or focus, and then Africa maybe a different focus, South America. Like, it must be a bit more challenging even to be big in this situation.
Yeah, I think one thing that we're telling the clients is just you have to stay on top of developments in society, because inevitably those will become part of or involved in ESG criteria. Maybe not directly, but it's important to stay on top of trends and developments. And certainly, you know, we didn't see the pandemic coming, and there's been sort of ESG related criteria that have come out of the pandemic.
Yeah, and I guess also, you know, it's something that should be on the radar of junior explorers as well, because if those, you know, major, you know, multinational companies are looking around to buy projects, they're probably going to want a project that's got off on the right foot in the ESG and diversity side of things.
Oh, very much so. And sometimes those major companies have certain criteria that that the juniors need to abide by. So having an awareness for that is really important.
So I'm going to ask about a word that I struggle saying, especially on air, but intersectionality. It's a term we hear a lot. And I just wanted to ask you about, like, its meaning, first of all, and then how does it show up in our industry, and how can we tackle something like that?
Right. So I'm sure that there are a variety of definitions for that term. As a white male, other than reporting on what companies are doing in the mining sector,
yep,
there are many, many more people much more qualified to speak to it. But with respect to diversity and ESG, I think the concept is that race and gender can overlap and intersect, and that different attributes may affect some individuals in society on multiple dimensions. So I think the key here is that diversity strategies which address those intersectional concepts need to be on a holistic and interconnected way, and create space within the organizations to address those circumstances.
Absolutely. I won't ask you to look ahead, because I know that by interviewing lawyers in the past, I should never ask them to look ahead into the future.
Right.
But, you know, given what's happened with COVID and the way that's impacted diversity, and, you know, the recent focus on people of color and anti-Black racism, anti-Asian racism, what tools are you seeing as the most useful that companies should be employing to, you know, attract and bring in this diverse workforce that hopefully we find in the next 10 to 20 years?
Yeah, I think it's about implementing the programs, taking steps to have a diverse workforce, and also at the executive level. I think, of course, I'm not on the ground with those companies, but in my view, creating a diverse workplace is to all of our strengths and or provide different perspectives, and I think that's what's so key.
Yeah,
and so I think the way that I think it's not going to be done in a day, but certainly some of these initiatives that we've seen over the last year or two have been a step in the right direction.
Well, thank you very much for your time today. We really appreciate you being on the show and appreciate you sharing your insight.
It was my pleasure. To you as well. Thanks so much.
Welcome Welcome back to the AME podcast, Exploration Matters. Our next guest is Jill Salinas, Executive Director of BC's Centre of Training and Excellence in Mining, or CTEM. I asked Jill to set the scene for us when it comes to diversity in exploration and mining.
We know that the industry is very diverse when we look at careers. There's 120 different careers that are needed in order to have mineral exploration and mining sites operate. So there's already huge diversity within the industry. If we kind of take a snapshot of that and we look at diversity within age, we do find that the mining industry is different than the general labor market in regard to our ages. So we have a lower amount of young adults. About 50% of what is in the workplace is what the BC mining industry sees for young adults. So that's individuals under the age of 25. What we also see in comparison to other industries are individuals over the age of 55. We have a higher percentage of those in our workforce than we do within the generic workforce. Those are two kind of critical touch points that we're looking at, individuals coming in and then those that are going to be exiting soon. The nice thing is what we have seen is a growth within the 25 to 35 year old age group within the mining industry. And that kind of gives us the hope that we are getting some new individuals in to kind of help keep that breadth that we need for the longevity of the industry. If we want to pivot and look at diversity in a different way, we do see probably our largest discrepancy within the amount of women that are in the workplace. So within BC, there's 48% of the workforce is made up of individuals that self-identify as women. And within the mining industry, we have hardly 20% of the industry that self-identifies as women, specifically 19%. Mm-hmm. So if we flip that around, we're kind of looking at 52% of the workplace self-identifies as male. And within the mineral exploration and mining industry, we have 81% that identify as male. So that's probably one of the biggest diversity metrics in comparison to the common workplace. Another way to look at it, which is kind of a good story, but one that we can grow on, is when we look at diversity in the sense of those that self-identify as Indigenous. So within the BC labor market, there is 5% that self-identify as Indigenous. And within our sector here in BC, there's 7% within the whole sector. But I want to add in that there's a number of sites across British Columbia where their employees, 30% of their employees or over 30% are self-identifying as Indigenous, which is a really good place to be. The other caveat I want us to think about is, or we say 5% within the whole workforce of BC. If we look at it regionally, it really changes the percentages. So if we look specifically at the North Coast Nechaco region, which Golden Triangle is situated within that region. In relation to the population, there's approximately 30 to 50% of the population that identifies as Indigenous. Mm-hmm. And so if we were looking at our projects being really representative of the communities, projects in those regions should strive to be closer to the regional demographic rather than the whole provincial demographic. So we're in a good spot, but there's still a lot of room to grow. And when we kind of look at the specific demographic and we overlay what careers and skills they have, we are seeing some significant gaps of where those that self-identify as women and self-identify as Indigenous aren't seen within certain roles and skill sets. And that's where we need to really shift in order to kind of be able to bring more of that demographic into the industry and figuring out how can we have more diversity within all the different careers that we have.
Before we jump into some of those solutions and look a little bit more at the barriers, can you give us a quick overview of the study itself, like how it came together, what questions you were trying to answer, and where did you get the data from?
Yeah, this was kind of breathed out of a 2019 report of the BC Mining Task Force, where it lists out a number of different recommendations of how to ensure that we have a robust industry moving forward. Mm-hmm. And this particular project looked at what are the future skills and training needs for the BC mineral exploration and mining sector, quite focused on that piece of it. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to understand what are the needs and what is the pathway to actually meet those needs. And we looked at some different sub focuses. Some of those were diversity and inclusion. What are skills and competencies needed and how do we meet those? What are the training needs?
Yeah.
What are the needs based on technology and innovation that influences it? And even the environmental, social, and governance piece, how is that going to change the future of what the workforce looks at? Because ultimately, the project has the end goal to support an industry that is ready to meet those emerging needs of society, the need to have critical minerals, to have a green economy, and to have a green lifestyle, and also that desire to find and produce minerals in the most environmental and cost-effective way. So we have a very big goal to get to, mm-hmm. and we need to understand the pathways in order to meet those desires that we have as a society and as an industry.
What are some examples of barriers that you identified? So barriers to young people coming in, barriers to women, barriers to people who identify as Indigenous. Can you give us some examples of those that you identified in the study?
Yeah, there's some ones that kind of percolate to the top that we think are quite common, which is awareness of the industry, awareness of the jobs that are there. And when we took a deeper look, we found that there were even more barriers outside of just knowing that the jobs are here or that the mine sites produce the minerals for the future. The participants shared the challenges of having access to childcare and family care. Our culture's, you know, in a different spot where there, you know, families have young kids, teenagers, as well as elders that they're looking out for. Mm-hmm. And how do they support them while getting training or while doing the job?
Yep.
Another barrier that came and shared across all the different regions was access to transportation, which is something that hasn't been talked about so much recently.
Yeah.
But what we're finding is that it's challenging to get a driver's license in more rural locations, just from access and capacity to access to cars, access to the driver's test, ability to get to and from. There's a lot of communities where they have to drive 2 hours or more just to be able to go take a test to get a driver's license, mm-hmm. and then drive all the way back. So that's becoming a real barrier when, as an industry, it requires driver's licenses to operate the equipment, and one that is, in a sense, outside of the industry scope and yet impacts it so much. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
There was different perspectives on what the barriers are to training, flexibility of training, local training for local jobs. The barrier for discrimination came up across all the different, you know, pathways. The ability to recognize our transferable skills. It's something that's going to be essential for the industry as we bring in new individuals to fill the roles. We have to be able to recognize the skill sets that they learned in their jobs previous or the skill sets that they learned in their life.
Yeah.
And to be able to build off of those. There was some barriers to retention that were also shared that are very similar in a way to the barriers of entry, but have that added layer of systemic workplace barriers, which could be career progression, awareness of how to take that next step in the industry. How do we get training while working full time and taking care of family in order to, you know, stay skilled with the skills changing so fast, as well as to be able to get those new skills for that next job, and kind of that family comfort, you know, how do we ensure that the workplaces are safe environments, mm-hmm. and allow individuals to really still have their family support and their family life while working in the workplace. So there's some barriers that we've known for many years, and then there's some that perhaps were known in different regions, but not kind of shared collectively across the province.
And it sounds like a lot of those would intersect as well, you know, intersect in terms of having to travel for work, but then having family mm-hmm. at home that you need to care for, and then at the same time trying to upskill to get the better position to maybe have better flexibility, but having that kind of being stuck in that cycle. Is that something that you found as well?
We found that, and we found that it was for all demographics and all genders were influenced by these barriers.
Yep.
And also some have compounded barriers, meaning that they have more than one barrier that is either preventing them from entering the workplace or causing the desire to exit the workplace. And that's the tricky space. Often we like to look at how can we overcome or mitigate or provide support to have equity to overcome one particular barrier. And we often forget that there are other barriers as well that are just as important. I kind of use it as, you know, we've got a pathway, a journey in our careers. And sometimes our journey stays fully in the mining industry. Other times, you know, it comes and goes. But in that pathway, you know, with the training or the careers, there can be trees that are across the path or, you know, logs that have fallen down.
Yep.
That can be viewed as a barrier. And some communities or some regions or some individuals might not just have one barrier or one that's spaced out along the path. So, okay, we get over one barrier and then a couple years down the road, we have another.
Yep.
Sometimes we have compounded barriers, like a log jam that we're trying to get over just to get to that other side. And some people do get over that log jam and others need the industry or, you know, partners or community to help get over that logjam or to get through it.
Yeah.
And other ones, it's just too intimidating to do it. They just go down that other pathway or create another path.
Yeah.
So it's important that when we look at barriers, we're looking at many of them at the same time.
Yep.
Rather than just a one-off. And to recognize that the participants kept bringing up the kind of contingency of everyone is different and every community is different. Every region is different. And so in the report, we list out the barriers that were shared. You know, we had over 300 different participants saying, you know, these are different barriers we've seen or we've experienced.
Yep.
We listed them out and we list out the solutions that have been shared and recognize that different barriers are going to come along. Mm-hmm. As we go down our path and different solutions are going to be there. We need to look at what's going to work best for this project or this community and be willing to adapt what those solutions are based on what the barriers are for that particular region.
And this isn't just an HR or a training thing. Mm-hmm. It impacts the whole company. It impacts investor confidence. It impacts project approval. It impacts access to land, permitting. Yeah, exactly.
And so, longevity of a project. Like if you have individuals that love to work at your project, it's going to help support the permit renewals. And projects are not able to go forward if they don't have the human resource to do it.
Yeah.
So we need to think of how can we run our industry differently in order to best protect our most valuable resource, which are, you know, our people and the land that rejuvenates them and keeps them safe.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time. I think I could probably ask you questions all day about this, but I'll take it offline and I'll ask you some other time. but Jill, thank you so much for joining us on the program today, and hopefully we'll get to talk to you again soon.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Kylie.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the AME podcast, Exploration Matters. Exploration Matters is a Mining Stock Daily partner production. I'm your host, Kylie Williams, and today's episode was produced on the traditional unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh First Nations. Once again, thank you to today's sponsor, Dentons. And if you would like more information on today's episode or any of our episodes, visit amebc.ca. The information presented should not be considered investment advice. The Association for Mineral Exploration BC and Mining Stock Daily are not responsible for any loss arising from any decision connected to the information presented herein. Please do your research or speak with a licensed financial representative before making any investment decisions.